On this episode of Still Loading, it's the game that never ends. It goes on and on, my friend. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, we are discussing a game. It's a first-time playthrough for me. It's a game that I have not played up until this year. And joining me to discuss said game, which you can read in the title, but we'll announce the game in a little bit, is Gerard Eady, who is a Twitch streamer, Irish archery champion, among a number of other things. Gerard, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. And today we are talking about the Stanley Parable, the parable of Stanley's. And I don't know, I was going to try to make some type of like religious joke because of the whole parable thing, but nothing was really coming to mind. So we're just going to kind of leave it there, leave it in the Bible. But we are talking about the Stanley Parable today. So my first question for you, though, when we first were going back and forth over email, I asked you to send me a list of five games or some of your favorites. And a lot of the games on your list are more horror-based games. And this was one of the ones that was not a horror game. So I want to ask, why is the Stanley Parable one? What about this game spoke to you, and when did you first discover it or play it?
So Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe came out, right? And, you know, I'd seen back in the day, you know, Markiplier or whatever play it. He's the first guy I ever seen play it. And I don't know, I kind of felt some nostalgia at the time because I'd just gotten, well, it was kind of like peaking on Twitch at the time. I was thinking, you know, this has gone pretty good. I'll give a look at the game. Maybe it's something, you know, worth doing. And, you know, streamers do this thing. Like, a game comes out, it becomes super popular. Mm-hmm. We all dive on it. We jump straight on, right?
Yep.
So I was no better. I hop on and, yeah, just wanted to see what it was all about. And I got lost in the sauce. It's just a crazy, crazy game. Like, the part that gets to me the most is, you know, there's so many things that can happen, so many options, but once you do it, it's done, right?
Yeah.
So it was like a bunch of doors in front of you. You go through each one of them. You have this amazing experience, but you have to walk back out, and that door's closed forever. It's locked forever. I'll never have the same experience ever again. That's what I think the game is mostly about, the like living with your choices, and you know, having to make, you know, your own choices. Because the narrator tells you the one thing, but in order to get more interesting stuff, or you know, I don't know. Basically, on that point, you have to disobey. You have to walk your own path sometimes.
You have to try different things. You have to try a bunch of different options, whether the narrator tells you that option or not.
Yeah, and the relationship you form with him as well. It's kind of like, you know, it starts off pretty like, you do this. Stanley did this. But when some of the deep endings, especially in the second game, it's more personal, which is kind of cool, especially when you've gone a couple hours into the game.
The narrator almost gets like, depending on which directions you go, he'll get very combative with you. Like, what's wrong with you? Why are you making these choices? You're deliberately ignoring me now. And I always kind of, it was amusing the first time I played it. As for myself, like I said, it was the first time I ever played this game. And oh man, buckle up your sit downs, because I went on a ride with this game. That's why I'm excited about this episode. So my initial impression playing it, I actually streamed it on Twitch as well, played it, and I was like, huh, this is interesting. I like the sense of humor of the narrator. He's kind of poking at you, jabbing at you, making some little digs. That's funny. And then after the way the game plays, listeners, is that the game loop is very short. It's probably like a 15 to 30 minute loop, depending on which ending you choose and how you play. And this game has multiple endings. It's like over 20 something like that. I actually have a list.
Crazy
up.
Much.
It's a lot. There's like 30 some odd endings, maybe. I don't know. I'd have to count them all to be certain, but there's a lot of different endings. And the first time I played through it, and you get through the end, and then it just loops back to the very beginning. It starts over completely fresh. And at first I was a little confused because I didn't know what really to expect. I did see somewhere like either on the menu where it's like it's the game that ends but doesn't end. They kind of like allude to this
idea.
It's
it never ends. Like, that's the thing of the game. You can never finish it. But, you know, at a certain point, you've done it, though. You're done. You've finished it. There's nothing left to do.
You've made all the choices. Epilogue you can unlock, which is like the closest to that, but you never see credits roll in this game. It's just very much, it's interesting. I've never really played something like this. So the reason I said my experience was interesting with it is like the first and second playthrough, I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. By the third one, I'm like, okay, this is starting to get dumb. By the fourth, like I actually started to like it less the more. So I had the opposite experience that you did, where you started enjoying it more every time you played through the loop again, versus with me, I started enjoying it less every time I played through the loop. And I was like, well, now I'm curious. I'm going to be curious to hear what Gerard has to say about why he likes this game so much as we kind of break this game down a little bit further. But then something else happened when I started doing research about the game, about the development of the game. It kind of started going back the opposite direction where I started enjoying it. I started liking it, like having more fond memory of it. I think what it ultimately boils down to is on my initial experience, it felt really, it felt very like egotistical almost. Like now that I understand more about what the intention of the games were, I don't really think that. But on that first playthrough, I was like, man, this feels very pretentious. This dude's just like, I get it. It's a game about the idea of choice in video games. It's really exploring that idea. But it just kind of felt like very knowing, like, don't you see you're being led here? Don't you see we're manipulating you? Huh? Isn't this crazy? And I'm like, I've seen this before. But then I started thinking a couple different things. One, this game came out in 2011, 2013. Or 2011 was the original mod. This was a Half-Life 2 mod originally. Came out in 2011, and then the original release came out in 2013. And at that time, no games really experimented with this type of gameplay or narrative or anything like that. You never really saw things that would kind of like that would go after the idea of like really deconstructing the idea of choice that's made available to players who are playing games. Like, how does a game like guide you along its path? How does it manipulate you to make the choices that you make? And no game had really done that at the time. So once I kind of got into that mindset, I'm like, okay, let me take out 2023 Josh. Let me try to step into 2013 Josh's shoes. Would this game have like surprised me back in 2013? And yes, it would have, because I wouldn't have played a game similar to this. But that was my experience with it. And I don't know if there's anything, I could see there's a little bit of like pain in your eyes at some of my issues with the game. So if you have any rebuttals, man, go for it. What did you like about the game? Or do you have anything to kind of bounce back off of what I said?
It's an experience that, you know, it's different for everybody, because myself and yourself, first 5 minutes could have been different. Definitely were different. Mm-hmm. Like, what was your first ending?
Oh, that's a good question. I think my first ending, I don't remember the name of it, but I literally did everything opposite of what the narrator said on purpose. Every single thing. Hold on. I did opposite for like the first half, and then I did. Then I started following what they said in the second half. And I think the ending was, it might have been the confusion ending. I'm trying to remember. There's like, that's the thing, like, because they have the names and they fit pretty well, but I'm trying to remember what exactly each one was. It might have been the confusion ending, or it might have been, I'm gonna have to look at the list.
I don't actually know what they're called. I just remember playing them, and like, first ending for me was I went into the car park, I started doing the loop, and I start flying at some point, and then eventually I die. And narrator says Stanley was crazy, and somebody looked down on him as like, you know, at least I'm not crazy like him.
Okay.
That was the first ending.
I think mine was, I kind of got into like the, I remember what it was. It was like, I got into the behind the scenes, like of the game itself. Like, you would see like there are parts of the game levels still in mid construction, And then there was, I think there was one where you could choose to burn a baby or not burn a baby or something like that.
I know it. Oh, I know.
You know what I'm talking about.
Got that 3 hours in. So I get, wow.
Yeah. That was like my first one. And I'm like, what the fuck is happening? This game is making me burn a metaphorical infant. This is weird, especially as a parent. What does that say about me? It's very, yeah. Right?
No matter what you did, you could not save that baby.
No, no matter what you could, otherwise you would just, like, you could have kept it there infinitely, but then you're just keeping it there infinitely. And the game, it was very meticulously developed, where the initial idea, because it was developed by the original creator of the game was a guy named Davey Reedon. And he eventually got someone from the UK named William Pugh. Pugh? Did I say his last name correctly? I don't know.
Sounds right.
I think that's pronounced correctly, but he came on for the official release. So the original mod was done solo by Davey Reedon, and then he brought William Pugh on for kind of like they did hire other programmers and whatnot, but for the most part, it was William and Davey who designed the game, who wrote the game, specifically the 2013 official release of it. And the whole idea that Davey had, because he started this as a college project back in 2008, I'll double check my notes on that. But he started as a college project, Half-Life 2 mod, and it was the idea of like, what if the player everything the player did consistently went against what the game narrator told them to do. At every turn, the player is they're trying to make the player want to disobey the narrator. And that was where this idea of having multiple endings came in and trying all these different things. And I kind of admire that, especially back in 2008, when the closest thing that would have come out that kind of played with that idea of choice in a video game, it would have been BioShock, at least to my knowledge. Maybe there's like some obscure game on the PC in the 90s that I don't know about. But BioShock and System Shock 2 kind of did that a little bit ish. But BioShock specifically really kind of played with that idea. So this was one of the first games that kind of worked with something like that. But I don't know. For you, Gerard, what were some of your, like, do you actually, I guess here's a question. Do you like walking sims? Because this game is a type of walking sim. Do you like walking sims, or is this one of the only ones you like?
It's the only one I like. I really don't like them at all. I don't know. It's more of like a personal experience, right? Like, going back to what I was saying earlier, like our first endings, my ending sets up that Danny's crazy, that the narrator's in control, and it's not really real because, you know, I was doing loops and I got found, right? Yours was don't burn a baby, right? So, you know, we get some really different things. That was my expectation set, and yeah, just an overall different experience.
Have you ever tried Firewatch?
I know it's in the game, and like you can be in that tower, but no, I haven't played it.
I don't play a lot of walking sims. I've really only played this one and Firewatch and maybe like one other. But the third one I was thinking of is more of a puzzle walking sim, but Firewatch might be worth checking out. It's got a really good story.
I think as a rule, people don't like walking sims as a rule.
Well, I think it depends on the player. There's actually some podcasting friends of mine. It's not like their favorite genre, but they love quirky indie games. So they go for walking sims and like, what was it? There's a game I was listening to, a podcast episode of theirs recently, where it's a simulation game called Bear and Breakfast, where you run a bed and breakfast, but you're a bear. And
I've heard about it. My girlfriend told me about it.
It's stuff like that. I just find that kind of a music. So there are people who do like walking sims. It just depends on, obviously, on the player. But what are some of the other endings that you got, and what are some of the more favorite ones of yours that you kind of played through?
Shit. One of my favorites is when you're collecting all of the Stanley. It's in the Ultra Deluxe version, right? You're collecting all like the Figleys, little figurines, right? Mm-hmm. And there's this like kind of like it's a bunch of like statues that are like surrounding it, like it's some kind of beautiful, you know, piece of art, you know. But it, yeah, it like it was a beautiful scene, beautiful art done for it. But all you're doing is realistically, you're grabbing a little figurine for a secret ending you might get. It doesn't really make a difference to the story, but you know, that was a very interesting scene because I was thinking to myself at the time, like, how many hours did someone have to set up this every, you know, position of every one of these mannequins and, you know, the lighting in here perfectly just to put a little figurine in here. And I thought to myself, was this something else? And they just put this figurine in here instead as a filler kind of thing. Because I imagine in game development, a lot of stuff gets, you know, recycled. You don't waste everything. Mm-hmm. You don't do it once and then skip it. Like I know, you know, making games in college, you recycle everything, scripts all the time. If you get like a bunch of assets together, and they look nice. Make like if you manually make a bookshelf or whatever, you're not going to redo that again. You're going to recycle it.
It's very true. I mean, hell, that's even true back to like old game design. If you look at like the original Super Mario Brothers, the clouds and the bushes are the same sprite, just color with a palette swap. Same thing, same eyes and everything, but it's effective. You don't even notice it.
I never know that till you told me.
Really? Yeah. It's kind of funny. If you'll never look at those bushes or clouds the same again. They're the same sprite, just different colors. I think for me, one of my favorites was there's a museum ending where you can walk through a museum and see the entire making of the game.
Yes. Which I thought wasn't used.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one room where he keeps repeating different variations of dialogue he didn't get to say in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like the narrator just like cut out lines or whatever. I love that. I love the bits.
I love it. I wish more games did shit like that where they have behind the scenes elements as an interactive part of the game where you can kind of experience more of what the developers felt as they were making the game, you know? Now, before I want to talk a little bit more about the behind the scenes, just kind of thinking of museum ending, but I'm very curious about what your interpretations of the kind of like the thematic elements of the game were, because I was talking a lot about how it's a deconstruction of like the illusion of choice in a game and how games manipulate players in a certain sense in order to get them to progress their game. But did you have a different interpretation of it, or was there anything that you kind of really took away from that? Like when you finish, you're like, it really left you thinking about something.
So it's something I can only ever do once. That's my main takeaway from it. I just thought to myself, look, I'll never get to play a game like that ever again. And, you know, experience the same choices again. So it sucks.
That kind of makes me think, you ever play Outer Wilds?
Never.
Outer Wilds, I don't know if you'd like it. You might, because you like horror stuff. It's not really horror per se, but it's very eerie. It makes you feel very unsettled a lot of the time because you're kind of by yourself in space, and you eventually do find some crazy fish that will eat you in a single bite. But like it's you're solving a mystery about it. One of those games, it's like this where once you play it once, you can't have that experience again, excuse me. And it's kind of heartbreaking that it's a one and done type of thing.
Yeah, I hate that. But I also love it because in a game about choices, being able to only do it once sucks. But, you know, what can I do? Like my idea was that eventually I'd forget about the endings. Mm-hmm. I gave it 6 months. I came back and played it again, but I still remembered them. So it didn't mean shit. I'm just doing the same thing over and over again. And yeah, I'd love to wipe my mind and do it all over again.
If there was one game you could wipe your mind and replay for the first time, whether it's Stanley Parable or not, what would it be?
Black Ops 1 campaign.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. That was, oh my gosh, it's been a while since I played Black Ops 1 campaign. I fell off.
Reznov! Freedom! For you, Mason, not for me.
Spoiler alert, you know, for brilliant. For over 10-year-old game, but that's the one where you find out your dude's been basically like mentally conditioned, right?
Yeah, in a gulag.
That's
what they were trying to have, you know, make him kill the president, and at the end it's ambiguous as to whether he did or not. It's I love that game.
Manchurian Candidate style. I get it. For me, I think it would have to be Journey on the PS3. Journey was something that I would the first time I played that, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. Outer Wilds that I mentioned before. And in all honesty, I would want to say maybe Final Fantasy VII. Final Fantasy VII, only because I know a bunch of people talk about the game ad nauseum, especially with the remake. But like when I first played it, I hadn't played like a JRPG like that. So seeing like that big world, like it was my first experience with anything even remotely open world. So if I could get that same feeling and being like, holy shit, there's this big world to explore, I'd give anything to have that back again, because that was one of the coolest feelings in the game, of just that sense of discovery.
There's some aspects of games that we never touch on, right? Or like some genres of games, right? So there's some people out there that'll never want to play FIFA. They'll never want to play any sports related game ever.
Mm-hmm.
Never want to do horror games. Never want to do FPS games. A lot of people don't want to do FPS games. I will never touch JRPG. I fall in that category. I don't know why. There's probably something out there that I would play, but I've never found one. I haven't found one yet.
I think if there was any that you'd like, it would either be, not necessarily, I'm not a fan of Dark Souls personally, but it would either be in like the...
It that
would
hardly be counts, like, is it?
That counts. It's a Japanese RPG.
Also, I haven't played it.
I have opinions on that game, which I will save for if I ever do a Dark Souls episode.
Someone said something one time, right? That if you add an easy mode, the game would fall apart. And I don't know how I feel about that. Like, you can shit on that fairly easy, but I feel like that would take away a lot from the games, because people spend hours in that game. Like, could you just blaze through it really fast if there was an easy mode?
I mean, it depends on the skill of the player. I do think, though, it would, as I would agree with that, believe it or not. If anything, like, if it's easy mode, then maybe make it so like you can take more hits. I don't know how you would balance that to make it slightly more approachable for lesser skilled players, because there's a whole debate about like accessibility in games, because a lot of fucking neckbeards are always like, oh, don't, if you make games too easy, you're just too bad at the games. Or I'm like, or games could also respect players' times. That's the big, like, for me, the reason I get mad at Dark Souls is because the bosses are hard. I don't mind that. I don't mind hard bosses. I don't mind hard level design. But if I have to spend 20 minutes in between dying and getting back to the same spot that I was, I only have 3 hours to play a night generally, because between the podcast and work and the kid.
Yeah.
And if you want me to spend, you know, like 5 to 10 minutes after every death of a fucking crazy hard game to get back to the boss just to try it again.
How many guys would listen to this right now and to hear that and say skill issue? If we were live on my channel right now, I would not hear the end of that. But like, I get it, especially for people who like just want to relax, right? You're not competitive with games, but people who normally commentate this stuff, right? They have all the time in the world to talk about it. So that's the view we're going to be pushed, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's like, and listen, it is a skill issue that I'm failing at the boss, but I don't have, because I have limited time to practice to get better at it. It's like, Do I really want to spend time on a game? Now, I think I would be more okay with it if I enjoyed the gameplay loop more, which I'm not criticizing the gameplay itself, mind you. I think it's fine. But I realized what ultimately made me realize that it's not a fault of the game design and it's more just my sense of taste, is that the whole catch, from my understanding of the Soulsborne games, is when you beat a boss, you get that sense of "fuck yeah, I did it!" Like this big sense of satisfaction and relief. Yeah, I finished it and was like, "That was a waste of my life." I did not feel any satisfaction when I beat 5 or 6 of the bosses, and some of the, apparently there's these gargoyles which are known to be some of the harder bosses. I beat them too. I beat some of the bosses and I was just like, do I really want to spend all this time going through a game that's just not hitting right? Nah, that was where I kind of stood with it. So I don't know. I know we're kind of off the topic of the Stanley Parable, but like,
yeah, but you know, still cool.
I mean, I think still this was, a, yeah, but it's a, it's a good topic. It's a good discussion to have, because I hate, especially like, you need to kind of have these types of discussions on forums like podcasts or even on Twitch streams, because you can have more of an open dialogue versus people just shit tweeting at each other, shit posting at each other all over the place. And you don't have like, because if someone just says, oh, you're just, you know, get good, the argument, the debate's over, because they're not going to change their mind. They have no reason to care about what your opinion is, just like you have no reason to care about theirs. But if you have a dialogue where you're either face to face or you're talking to someone, you have to at least give some semblance of a shit, because you have to at least listen, you know?
Yeah. So moral of the story is some people like some kinds of games and some people don't.
I feel like that's where it always boils around to. You'd think after all, it always boils down to that, excuse me. You'd think after fucking like decades of just people getting mad over what should be entertainment, they would just realize like maybe just some games aren't for everybody. You know?
Literally. But yeah.
In any case.
Like I'm never going to play, you know, I was going to say Stardew Valley, but I probably will play that. There's a lot of games I wouldn't play. I don't have an example anymore, so we're going to move on.
it's a good topic though too, because I like, based off what I see you play and versus my like taste in gaming, you and I have extremely different tastes in games.
What's the last three games you played?
Last three, besides Stanley Parable, I was playing Tasmania for the Sega Genesis for an upcoming podcast episode.
Jesus.
I wouldn't say I necessarily enjoy, well, I guess it would be Mega Drive for you guys. The Mega Drive, I'm going to save my opinions for that. That I didn't really enjoy that, but let me put it this way. Last three games that I played and enjoyed, and that whether it's for the podcast or otherwise, Octopath Traveler for the Switch, JRPG. I'm trying to think what it's so hard to remember what I've, some Mario games. I do really like platformers. I would say my favorite genre is platformers, whether it's Mario or like,
they can be fun.
Celeste is one of my favorite platformers. It's hard to really say what most recent games I played were, because I've played like four or five in the last week in quick succession in preparation for various episodes. So that it's like, I remember it for the episode and then I have to just completely switch gears and go on to something else. So it's very much like in one ear and out the other. But seeing what you play, like you play a lot of horror games, and I'm also like, I like first person shooters, but I'm not a big Call of Duty fan or Fortnite fan. I know that's third person, but I'm like, and I can't say either any of them are bad. I just don't play them. Like there's other games that, mm-hmm. you know, pique my interest. But that's also like I was trying to say before, like it's why I was excited to have you on, because our opinions on games are going to be vastly different. Like you just said, you have no interest in JRPGs at all. They just don't seem appealing in the slightest. And that's okay. Like not ever, I know lots of people that don't like JRPGs. I'll make a note not to have you on any JRPG episodes. That would be interesting. Force someone who hates JRPG.
Games where you have to swing a sword, I guess as a rule, I'm not really into. Games where you're unarmed, like, you know, Resident Evil style kind of games, you know, maybe third person shooters or first person shooters. I love those. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. Swing a sword. Yeah, I feel like there's a bit more skill in like a third person, because you got to aim it a bit better versus, you know, swing a sword and, you know, it's a big curve of a attack area.
See, I disagree is because Dark Souls requires a lot, like, and I hate Dark Souls. I shouldn't say I hate, but I'm not a fan of Dark Souls. But that game requires a lot of skill, because even though you're swinging a sword, it's all timing based. It's all knowing the enemy's patterns. It's all, you have to be much more intentional with your movements in that game than like other games that I've played, other hack and slash games like Dynasty Warriors or any other Warriors games. You don't need necessarily, I'm sure there's some skill involved for higher levels of play, but just in casual play, it's a button masher. You just smash the square button on your PlayStation controller or whatever it is, and you win. That's pretty much it, depending on the difficulty that you play on. Versus Dark Souls, you cannot do that. If you mash your character, like there is essentially a cooldown timer between each swing, because they kind of make it somewhat realistic, where like when you swing, there's a follow through and you have to wait a second for your character to bring the sword back up so they can swing again or swing on the upswing or something like that. But with you just might like more action, like a little bit more frenetic action based games, and JRPGs are not heavily action based. They're more turn based. And if they are, that's what I was saying, like you might like something that's a little bit more like the more modern JRPGs, in the sense where they're more action based versus like menu based or turn based or something like that.
Is this a JRPG? I think I've one I've played before. What discount? I played this game called Dragon Quest IX.
Yes, that is
a Japanese role playing game.
That is the most JRPG of any JRPG you can get.
I didn't finish it, but I played that back in the day. I loved it. What happened was my dog hit my DS charger when I was a kid.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing. We spend like 15 fucking minutes on like how I don't like JRPGs, and you're like, I did play this one game I think was a JRPG, and you literally cited the most JRPG-ass JRPG you could ever get. Sorry, that's just really funny to me.
I hate it.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. Okay.
I'd actually love to play that again. Had a DS.
What appeals to me about the JRPG games is they allow them to tell it's a lot more. There's a lot more. They're longer games, so there's a lot more breathing room for story to grow and for character development. Not saying every game does that well, but in general, that's what a lot of people find appealing to them. Is that, and obviously the battle systems and whatnot, but the storylines are these long expressive things, so you have hours and hours with these characters, and it's easier to build this like emotional attachment to these characters in the game. Not saying that, you know, shooter games can't do that as well, but like since you're spending significantly more time, you develop a stronger emotional attachment. It depends on the game too. Some games have shitty stories. That's the same with all though. But yeah, so I mean, at least that's why I like JRPGs. I like it for the story, and I actually love the JRPG music a lot. But in any case, we've went on a very long tangent.
It took 32 minutes to figure out that I'm a hypocrite. Great.
You're not a hypocrite. You just have you don't like JRPGs except for that one JRPG. It's simple as that. It is amusing. I'd be very curious if you try some others similar to, you said Dragon Quest IX, I think. If you end up trying others like that, I'd be curious if you end up liking them or not. So real quick, I wanted to bring it back to Stanley Parable. I do want to talk about some of the development with this game, and I might be rattling off some facts here, whatnot. I found a really cool documentary on YouTube by a YouTuber named That Guy Glenn, and he did a really good job of kind of breaking down a lot of interesting stuff with this game. So when Davey Reedan first started developing the Stanley Parable, it was, like I said, it was in 2008. He was only 19 years old, and
only 19 when he started. Damn.
Yeah, he was 19. I mean, dude. Actually, you want to talk about like another, he worked on this in college. You want to talk about another crazy game that kind of made it big with Origins from a college development crew? Portal started out as a game called Narbacular Drop, which was developed by a group of grad students at DigiPen, which is, I guess, Microsoft's like game development universe, or like DigiPen's a pretty prestigious game development program. They made a game called Narbacular Drop, and you can play Narbacular Drop for free. It's, the graphics are not great, especially because it's a student made game on a budget back in like 2004. So like you're looking at like almost 20 years old at this point, but it was really impressive because it had the whole portal idea where you walk through one door and come out the other on the opposite side. And it was really impressive. When they presented that, it was so impressive. That's when Steam hired them. Like Gabe Newell and whoever at Steam was like, or Valve was like, holy shit, this is amazing. Do you want to work for us? And they said, yeah. All right, you're making this game, but with a bigger budget. And then Portal was born. Not all games work like that. Like the way this game got.
I wish.
What? Right?
I said, I wish to work with this.
I mean, it's got to have a really unique idea, man. It's what it is, but it's a really cool story though. That's how Portal came to be. with the Stanley Parable, Davey Reedon uploaded this to a website for Half-Life 2 mods. It became insanely popular, and it eventually got to the point where like he was starting getting offers from different game development studios, and he then decided to, he turned it all down because he didn't want to do anything that he was being pitched. Like anyone, any of the jobs he was offered, he did not like or didn't want to do or wanted to do on his own terms. And so he decided, well, I'm going to take my mod and turn it into a full-fledged game. And that's when he hired William Pugh to help him with it. And William was really young as well. I think William was in like a teenager, like younger than 19. I think he was under 18 at the time. And they worked on this game for a good long while. That's where they also got the narrator, Kevin Brighting, who is just fucking fantastic as the narrator in this game. Do you have any comments on the narrator? I can't say enough kind things about his performance.
I wish he did more. That's my thing on him. He's such a great voice, and the guy was very open to doing a lot of fan projects. I've seen there's a bunch like Stanley Parable short films out there by, you know, kids, literal kids, where, you know, he's voiced over them, and it's adorable. It's adorable. Someone loved the game so much, and they do like a Day in My Life kind of thing, or like stuff like that back in the day. And he would narrate. I don't know if he cost money or anything, but if that guy had a Cameo account, holy schmoly, would he rack in some money? He'd retire. He'd retire.
I didn't even think of that. That'd be genius. I mean, he might run out of free time. I don't know how long the Cameo responses could be, but that, you're right, that would be a great idea for him. I didn't know that he did like fan films and stuff like that. That's really cool.
Let me take a look and see what I got here. We got one called Jack, that was 6 years ago. There's one literally called The Stanley Parable, live action fan film. The Stanley Parable. Those are the main ones, a proper ending. And he voices every single one of these.
That's amazing.
Another one. Most of them are just called The Stanley Parable. That's why I'm not calling them out. But yeah, he's voiced a lot of them. I've seen like the first three I called out, he's voiced those ones.
And bless him. That's so brilliant. Nice of him. That's wonderful. He's fantastic. They did a great job bringing him on. They did say he was just nothing but fantastic for them too. Like he came back in, he did so many different takes, he did so many different recording sessions. And apparently working with William on this, Davey loved it. Him and William got along fantastically. They loved working with each other. But the original mod came out on July 31st, 2011, and the final game, came out in 2013. I'll double check on the date. October 17th, 2013 is when the official remake of, I guess, or official release of the game that wasn't a mod came out. And Davey and William created Galactic Cafe. That was their developing company together, and they worked on this. But they both had very different experiences in response to this game. Davey, he hated the newfound attention he got. He hated what the internet is to, unfortunately, to anyone who has any level of success, where it's the highest of praises and the worst of the worst in terms of critics and critiques, whether warranted or otherwise. And I don't,
most of the time, not warranted. People can just be dickheads sometimes.
Yeah, dude, I fucking hate. I always hate when someone will, like, regardless of whether I agree with the content creator's response, they'll, you know, someone will chastise them on Twitter or in the comments or whatever, and then they'll respond, and maybe it's not in the best way, but then everyone's like, oh, don't you have a thick skin? You should grow up, like, you learn to take criticism. And it's like, there's a big difference when it's five or six people just saying, hey, you could do better on this, or hey, I didn't like this for this reason, or hey, blah blah blah. There's a big fucking difference between that and thousands of people constantly messaging you, either that or even worse, sending like death threats or doxing you or any of those things. I had a voice actress on, the voice actress from Firewatch that we mentioned before.
Oh,
and she said, like, at the end of the game, because the end of the game is a little controversial, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but she got death threats from players of the game because of the character she voiced, not her. She said nothing about the game, but because of the character she voiced. And it's like, that's insane. So I can only imagine Davey dealing with shit like that. I hope I don't know if he got any death threats. I'm not trying to say that definitely happened.
I think he's universally loved. I've never seen someone say anything like I've never seen like a hot take on Stanley Parable. Thank God. But I'd imagine that there's a couple evil things in there. He's probably got something.
I mean, there's always going to be someone that, no matter how universally liked something is, there's always that like 1-3% of people who dislike it. And that's fine. They're allowed to dislike something. But it always blows my mind when a creator responds to the negative stuff and everyone's like, oh, why don't you just grow a thicker skin? I'm like, it's easy for you to say when you're not getting criticized hundreds of times a day. And I'm not speaking
from my own personal experience. Especially how much work goes into things.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not even saying that from personal experience. I've never really had to deal with a heckler or a troll, you know, knock on wood that I don't have to deal with that in my lifetime or ever. But it's one thing when, you know, you never have to deal with it on a day in and day out basis. And it's another thing when it's literally all that you see when you get on and all your notifications blow up and your phone blows up and shit like that. Like, I don't know. That shit always irks me when people are like that. So Davey had a really rough go due to the success of the Stanley Parable. Like, he was happy it did well, but the spotlight being put on him made it so much more. He hated it. He hated doing that. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, William felt like he was overlooked because all the focus was on Davey, and William's like, hey, like, I worked on this game too. I put blood, sweat, and tears into this thing. And everyone knows it as the game Davey Reed and created, which he technically did. But like, William had a huge hand in a lot of the different endings for the 2013 release. And they came back together like because I guess somewhat of us like a saying this a little bit early. They disbanded. Galactic Cafe disbanded. Him and William did not work together after this game, but not because they didn't like each other. They actually still love working with each other. They have nothing but admiration and respect for each other. But Davey didn't want to do the same things William did, so they just had this very amicable split. William went on to create his own game studio, which is called, I'm going to double check, Crows, Crows, Crows. I didn't know that was the name.
Yep, and they made another game. And when I was on my come down from the high that is Stanley Parable, I found Dr. Langishkov, The Tiger and the Terribly Cursed Emerald, a whirlwind heist. A similar game made by those guys. It was only a 20-minute experience, but it was...
Did you play it?
It was nice.
It was nice?
Yeah, I loved it. Good same kind of style. Sucked. It wasn't the same narrator. But yeah, if you're on a high from that game, you want to... You know, come down a little bit better. That's a great game to get.
Was that also a walking
sim? And yes.
Oh man, I found your second hypocrite again. You said you didn't like walking sims. Here's your second.
It's not like a pure walking sim. Like, there's some puzzles in it too, and a horror element. But it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Did you like just in thinking of horror games? Did you like Amnesia? I've never played it. I'm a scaredy cat. I hate being scared.
Played it briefly. What games did I put down that I
enjoying
when I emailed you?
Give me 2 seconds.
Let me go back because we've been emailing over like months.
Yeah, it's because it originally reached out to me like about a month and a half ago or so. No, so while I'm looking that up, I'm going to see if I
can. At the time, these games would have been fresh in my mind.
Here we go. Evil Within, The Last of Us, Valheim, Black Mesa, and Stanley Parable. Only reason I didn't go with The Last of Us is
now.
Oh, jeez. The only reason I didn't go with The Last of Us because I've already done 2 episodes, one on the first game and one on the second. So I've already covered The Last of Us ad nauseum. And I hadn't played Valheim. I think I felt like I would have needed to play a lot of hours to do something definitive on, because that's like the Viking. It's not Minecraft. That's a really.
Well, it's Viking Minecraft. Come on.
It's Viking. Let's be honest. Viking Minecraft. Kind of, yeah, Viking Minecraft. I've played a little bit. I own Valheim. I played a little bit of it. I thought it was really cool, but I didn't get much.
Same
of a
people
chance.
Made Deep Rock Galactic. The same group.
They made what, sorry?
Deep Rock Galactic. It's on the Game Pass at the moment. Boat of Mars.
I've never even heard of that.
It's kind of like Get the Fuck Out, but with dwarves.
Huh. I will have
Space dwarves. Same visual style as Valheim.
Okay. It's rated pretty highly too. Wow. I've never heard a cooperative first-person shooter. Okay, that looks fucking cool.
You want to hear about first-person shooters? Let's talk, man. That's normally my jam, but Stanley Parable, the reason it's on the list is because it's just so out of my usual group.
I feel like everyone has that one game where it's like they don't expect to like it as much as they do because it's so far out of the norm of what they usually play. Like for me, it was Outer Wilds. Actually, you know what? I take that back. For me, it probably was Modern Warfare because back at the time, when the first Modern Warfare came out, I had never played. It's kind of like what your experience was with Black Ops. Like that story just blew me away. I was not expecting the story that was in the first Modern Warfare game. And at the time I was kind of burnt out on like military first person shooters. Cause all I ever wanted to do was play Medal of Honor. Cause I loved World War II first person shooters and that they were going the way of the dodo at that time. But anyway,
I used to have that game, Medal of Honor.
Which one? There's a lot.
I haven't a clue. I had one of them. Anyway. I remember we had some... I think one day when I was younger, my dad just decided he wanted to buy a bunch of games to fill up the cabinet. And he did. There were some weird ones in there, dude. And growing up, I just every now and then threw one in and found out, oh, this is an awesome game. It's like Transformer Battle Royale kind of game before there were Battle Royales.
Really?
What else was there? You know, Sniper Elite. That was a good one. Black Ops 1 and 2 were in there as well. Yeah.
What system were these all for?
Xbox.
Black Ops, I'm assuming 360.
I assume so.
Because Black Ops, it's been
a minute. I haven't had an Xbox 360 in a long time.
I think because the original Black Ops, like Call of Duty Black Ops games came out on the 360. Medal of Honor, there was a Medal of Honor game on the 360 PS3 era called Medal of Honor Airborne, which was kind of cool because you could like airdrop, like you would take like the you were a paratrooper and there was a big open battlefield and you would launch out of the plane, jump out of the plane, and you could choose where you land on the battlefield. And that was really cool. And they would mark areas for you that were safe to land and then other areas that were a little bit more. Like if you could land technically anywhere, but if you don't land in the marked safe areas, then you run the risk of pretty much getting murdered right away because there's enemies everywhere.
Yeah.
Really cool idea.
So it's kind of choosing your difficulty.
Yeah. And that it's interesting, but I've never really seen another first person shooter do something like that in terms of a single player thing. Obviously you see shit like that with, you know, like all the Battleground games, whether it's, I've never even played PUBG or Fortnite, but PUBG, you jump out of the airplane, right? That's how it starts.
I've never played PUBG, but I have played Fortnite.
Do they do that in Fortnite? I have no fucking clue.
Yeah, you jump out of a bus and you go down. I haven't played that game, thankfully, in about 3 or 4 years.
I don't blame you.
The first year and then I got away from it. I hated it after a while.
Yeah. That's kind of how it was. I mean, the only reason I've never really tried it because I'm not a big multiplayer guy, just because let me put it this way. I get very competitive and I'm never good, obviously, in the beginning because you're still learning. And then I get mad that I'm not very good. So then I become a bit of a sore loser. I've never enjoyed that about myself. So I just kind of take myself out of the situation so I don't have to be a
whiny. Use it as fuel. Use it as fuel, my friend. Like that's the thing with the FPS games, man. You know? You're going to get your ass kicked more times than not, but the time you kick ass, the time you do something dirty, a time you walk up to a guy, you see sniping out a window, you put a shotgun to the back of his head and you blow the trigger, man, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling.
See, it doesn't do it for me. I think the closest I've gotten was like Halo 2, or no, like sniper stuff. I think that's for me. I always like a good, like, I always like trying to be...
impossible headshot.
Mm-hmm. That, exactly. Any type of like really sick, like a target moving on the run or something like that, anything like that.
Yeah,
I don't really have much else to bring it back to Stanley Parable. I knew we were going to, I'll be honest, I knew we were going to get on tangents with this, and I'm glad we did, because Stanley Parable, as much as it's a really cool game, I thought, in all honesty, there's more to talk about with its development than it is about the gameplay, because the game is just a bunch of different deconstructions of the illusion of player choice in gaming, which is really cool. And, you know, exploring the idea of what if a player just went against the narrator, because in almost every game, it's all about giving the players a series of choices and seeing what they do with it. And in Stanley Parable, it's trying to really explore the idea of how many choices can we give a player, how far can we push their perception? And it's really well done. I don't think I'd ever play it again. I understand why people like it so much, and I understand why you enjoyed it too, because it's so different. Even now, it's so different from anything that you really see.
I've never found a game like it.
No, and it's weird because it never feels like the reason I didn't like it at first is because I kind of got tired of the narrator just mocking you the whole time. And it wasn't because he was mocking me. It was just kind of like I'm just trying to like figure out all that you have to offer. And by me literally doing what you want me to do by exploring the game, it's just snide comment after snide comment. And after a while, I'm just like, this is just annoying now. Like, it's not funny to me. I was laughing at first, and now after hearing it, I'm just like, I get it. You're poking fun at this whole idea, blah, blah, blah. But there's so many different endings, and it's kind of cool. Like you said, you never really know which one your first playthrough is going to be. Everyone has a different ending, because some players will disobey it for a little bit and then halfway through be like, fuck that, I'm going to actually try to follow what the narrator says. And then others will switch back and forth or follow the narrator the whole way through, like any number of different things. So it is a very cool game. I respect what it did for game design at the time. I'm honestly amazed we were able to go almost an hour just kind of between. I mean, we probably spent about like 30 minutes on the game itself and the last, and at least 20 to 30 on non Stanley Parable things. So I'm actually pretty happy with that balance.
Well, look, Dick, you could go on a Modern Warfare rant forever. Like, there's lore in there, there's gameplay in there. Stanley is just, you know, you have to have been there. Like, realistically, you got to have been there. You can watch someone play it. Not the same feeling.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah, not even close. Now I think about it, not even close to the same feeling. And yeah, everyone has their own experience. Whatever your first ending is, set your tone. After that, it's all fun. Or if you look at it more like a more in depth, like we were talking about earlier, I guess the overall meaning is, you know, your choices do and don't matter. And my main thing I learned from it was like, kind of enjoy your first time with things more. So the first time you do something, just appreciate it more, because you'll never get that feeling again.
I 100%. It's like you nailed it right on the head at the beginning. It's one of those games where when you play it through the first time, you're never going to get that same experience again. And it sucks, but that's just kind of how it is. So I want to start wrapping up this episode. What I want to do to kind of end things off is I do want to ask a couple questions about you, just because I mentioned at the top, you were the Irish archery champion for a good number of years. Are you still practicing archery out of curiosity? No. Or is it? No?
No. I got really competitive with other things since, but
I getcha.
No. With COVID, I just didn't do it anymore. I used to be in a lot better shape, but not anymore. Getting back into it though, thankfully. I was at my heaviest, my worst shape in 2020. I was this big ball of blubber, and I'm getting back into things now, so I'm feeling good about myself. And, you know, maybe I'll get back into it eventually, but, you know, the way things are right now, you know, last year at college, trying to make the streams go. It's something that's very far, far in the back of my mind. There's a bow right above my head, and there's another one.
I can see it a little bit, yeah.
Right there, there's a limb of a bow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's always there, but I'll pick it up eventually.
Have you, this is like the only question that I really wanted to ask in regards to the archery, did you ever find that archery helped you with what you're doing currently, whether it's work? Because you are working on a game. We talked a little bit about that off mic, and we can go into that a little bit more in a second. But between Twitch streaming and podcasting, did you ever find, was there any, I know they don't seem connected, but did you find any connections after kind of getting involved with both?
Consistency is what I learned from archery, realistically. Because you got to do the same thing over and over again, and it'll eventually work. But it's not like insanity where, you know, do the same thing, expect something else, or expect the same thing or whatever that phrase is supposed to be.
Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yeah. Like, you do have to do different things, do your homework, do a lot of training. It helps you understand your excuses a bit better, right? Because like, you might be a good archer and you might miss an easy shot, right? And you have to think like, well, I had a kind of a shit week at work. You know, I had a fight with my wife before I left. Ran over an old lady on the way here. You know, it's, you know, stuff like that. You know, the usual.
Yeah.
You have to take into account things that are affecting you a lot more. So it makes me, a bit more insightful of myself.
I gotcha.
Like, you know, some, like, some guys ignore, you know, when something's wrong with them. Kind of helps me accept it, move on with it.
That's a good way to handle it. That's good. And I do, especially in what you're currently doing with like the content creation game and everything and Twitch streaming, it's the consistency and the just the patience and just having to keep grinding away at something and trying different tweaks here and there to try to build your audience. And you have done that. I saw on your Twitch channel you have like over 2,000 followers on there, which is pretty awesome. It's hard to grow on Twitch, especially in the early stages. You have to give people a reason to watch.
Horrific. It's awful. I hate it. Honestly, I do. It is horrific growing on Twitch. Like, oh, YouTube. Like, I wish I never did Twitch. I wish I did YouTube instead, realistically. Like, really? I have no feeling of brand loyalty towards Twitch at all. I wouldn't do Kick. I feel like Kick's a bit mental out there. But I've got like no real feeling of loyalty to Twitch.
I stream every Tuesday and Thursday over on my area or on my end, but I can't stay consistent because of the podcast and parenting and whatnot, but like, it's impossible. Like, I don't stream the popular games. Like you said, you have to kind of follow the trends with it. And if that game, if you're not interested in that game, you're kind of out of luck. You gotta do it, or you just gotta do what makes you happy.
As of a couple of days ago, right? Anyone who's listening right now and they stream on Twitch or whatever, and if you notice your views are dog shit right now, right? Because they changed something. If someone doesn't comment, if someone's watching and doesn't say something in chat for a duration of 40 minutes, the view stops counting.
Really?
You could have 20 people in there right now, right? And it could come up as 15, could come up as 5. Like, lurkers don't mean anything anymore. My average was like, what, 7 today? 8 today? Right?
But you probably had more people. Would be like, that makes way a lot higher. More sense, because I would average like 2 or 3 for a while, and now I'm only averaging 1 because most of my views are lurkers.
Yeah, that's how I watch streams. I don't go into someone's chat and be like, talk to me, I want you to talk to me. I'm not a baby. I don't need you like to talk to me and like hear about my day, right? I want to see somebody, you know, be playful, be funny, you know, have a good time on stream. Like, you're not going to watch Dr. Disrespect and be like, he's not answering my messages. You know, you watch him because he's a character, he's funny. And, you know, sucks. I know big streamers having way lower view counts because of it now. Just another way to stop you getting partner.
That's fucking bullshit. That makes me upset. Or I mean, I was never planning on going for partner, but that just makes me more upset that it's like, why? Whatever. Twitch, strong words.
If you start streaming on YouTube, right, you can do YouTube, you can do Kick, you can do Facebook, you can do TikTok. Is there anything else? I think that's it. That's 4 things you can do. You can do all 4 of those. And with Twitch, you can do Twitch, TikTok, Instagram Live, but I don't know how anyone does that.
Yeah, it's a mystery. I don't feel like figuring all that shit out. Yeah. But all right, now for your own stuff, I asked you a couple questions about your Twitch stream and your archery, but you told me off mic you're working on a game. So is there you said it's coming out later this year, most likely?
It was originally planned. I had a 5-man development team in college, mm-hmm. and they dropped like flies. And eventually it was just me. And I wasn't willing to put it up for anything more than a college thing, because if I'm going to do a game, I want to do it perfectly, right? Like anything. Like if you tell me you're going to start painting, are you going to show me a doodle you did? No, you're going to work on it and then tell me this is the final result when you feel it's perfect. And I'm not going to just put garbage out there. I have a buddy of mine who's in game development, especially with VR. And we're looking at setting up a similar game to one of the ones we talked about today. Not in VR, but yeah. We have a couple other ideas for other ones, but all we have now was, the skeleton of my previous game and his, and whatever we're going to share between those. Might even change engine, might go to Unreal Engine, and we might try something completely different. But right now, what's set in stone is game starts development in late May. Well, resumes in late May. It's like, a lot of games start off as one thing and end something else. Evil Within 3 started off, what's it called? Tokyo something. Evil Within 3 was in development. It became something else. Evil Within 3, what's it turn into in the end?
Ghostwire Tokyo?
Yeah.
Ghostwire Tokyo? That was Evil Within 3 originally?
It started off as Evil Within 3 and then became Ghostwire Tokyo. Development on that game was originally supposed to be Evil Within 3. It happens all the time. You wouldn't believe how many games start off as something else.
I believe it.
Black Ops 2 started off with Reznov supposed to be alive. But that went away.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything that you just kind of keep an eye out on your socials, I guess, for that, which we will share your socials, obviously, at the end as we wrap up. But just keep an eye out for any updates on that over at your socials.
On most things, I'm the Irish G-Man, except Facebook. Facebook doesn't let you say G-Man. It's offensive, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, I had no idea. My Facebook page is my name.
Had no idea that was even a thing.
Yeah, it just means government agent, right?
I guess so. I mean, there's a character in Half-Life called G-Man, so I don't know.
Yeah. One of the first games I streamed on Twitch was Black Mesa, so hence which is the Half-Life remake, which is the reason, one of the reasons for G-Man. But I started getting called G-Man by the viewers, because who the fuck wants to type in Gerard when you can say G-Man?
No, I gotcha.
You know?
All right. So yeah, so everyone can find you everywhere on like Twitter, Instagram, obviously Twitch at the Irish G-Man. And then what's it on Facebook again? Sorry.
Just my name, Gerard Eady.
Gerard Eady. Okay. And listeners, that is spelled EADY, correct? I just want to make sure.
That's right.
There we go. All right. Name. Good. I just wanted to make sure. I'm like, I spelled it out. I'm like, oh shit. Did I, if I got that wrong, that'd be really embarrassing. And it completely direct them to the wrong place. Any final thoughts on Stanley Parable that you want to kind of talk about before I give my socials or anything like that?
You're an emotional person and you're going through something weird in your life. Probably a good game to pick up. It just teaches you a lot about your choices.
I can see that. There's so many different options, especially
if you're an emotional person anyway, it'll resonate better with you anyway. Like, if you're an emotional person, don't play Resident Evil, you play something like this where you might, gain something out of it. It's awesome. It's funny. It has serious moments, and the serious moments are what made it for me. I'm a COD player, and I love this game. If it sucked me in, give it a go.
I think that is a very good endorsement. A COD player likes the, like a walking sim of all things. One of the, a slower paced game, but it works. As much as I had issues with it, I'm happy I finally played it, and I'm happy I can see why it was so important. Even if it's not necessarily my cup of tea, it didn't speak to me as much as it did you. I'm happy that it spoke to you as much as it did, but I'm also happy I finally have an idea of what this game is supposed to be about. I have a frame of reference of it now when people bring it up. So That will do it for this episode of Still Loading, though. I think this was a lot of fun, man. Thank you so much for joining me, Gerard.
I appreciate it, man. It was fun.
As
especially
for me,
that I know I'm a big hypocrite.
Well, you learn something new about yourself.
Yeah.
I'm just
there you go. Yeah, there we go. Learn
no.
stuff.
No. But no, as for me, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, please give it a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use, because it makes me feel warm and fuzzy, and I like feeling warm and fuzzy. And if you want to support the show monetarily, you can go to Patreon.com/StillLoadingPod. For $1 a month, you'll get all the episodes early at better audio quality, plus access to some patron-exclusive channels on the Discord and voting rights. There is every quarterly voting polls that help steer and guide the show into picking future games that I'm going to talk about. So that's all for
$1.
It's
funny you say that.
Hmm.
I also do voting polls in my community. I thought I was the only person that did it.
No, it's a good way to see if what your fans want you to experience, because they do have a semblance of who you are as a person, maybe not entirely, but they have at least some idea of your tastes and interests. So they either can, like, I actually had someone make me try Dead Space for the first time, and it was a good game. I'm not even criticizing it. I just hate being scared. I'm a wimp with same. That type of shit. Oh my gosh. But the first poll at the time this comes out, when is this? This episode, actually, at the time this comes out, this will be after the first poll topic episode has already been released, which was Spec Ops: The Line. So and at the time, I guess the next poll has already happened. So this is kind of a shitty advertising thing. You're going to have to wait 3 more months for the next poll, but still sign up, because you get some cool shit for the $1 a month. For $4 a month, you'll get everything at the $1 tier, plus access to 2 bonus episodes every month, 2 mini bonus episodes. And for $5 a month, you'll get everything at the previous tiers, plus access to Still Bonding, which is a James Bond podcast where 2 friends bond over 007. At the time this episode comes out, there were 8 episodes out of it, or close to 8 episodes. It's either Diamonds Are Forever or Live and Let Die will be the next ones out. So that's all over at patreon.com/stillloadingpod. But of course, the most important shout out is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support them, go to Bit by Bit Foundation and consider donate, or bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. That will do it for this episode of Still Loading. Thank you all so much for listening. Gerard, thank you once again for joining me.
It was a pleasure. I appreciate it, man.
And I will see you all next time.